It's Tuesday, January 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the battle for Syria amid the struggle to hold peace talks. A Pakistani school reopens following a deadly attack. China's economic challenge to keep a stable currency, recognizing a common but silent ailment.
But we have some challenges ahead of us. We'll continue to plow our streets and pick up the snow.
The aftermath of an epic snowstorm. Celebration for one of America's favorite singers. It's all on today's International Edition. Ahead of UN-mediated Syrian peace talks scheduled this week in Geneva, government forces backed by militia, Lebanese Hezbollah, Iran, and Russian airstrikes wrested another northwest town from rebel forces. Rabia has been held by rebel forces since 2012. Mideast analyst Alan Payend of Ohio State University tells VOA's Victor Beatty this is significant as it cuts into rebel supply routes that come across the Turkish border.
Anything which can take some of these cities which are on the supply routes, it's extremely important militarily and also psychologically for the ISIL forces, and also it somehow boosts the morale of the Syrian army and the Kurdish Peshmerga, because Turks are also very much interested in the defeat of the Daesh or the ISIL. So this is an important development. But the fear is that Russians and Iranians are focusing on those groups which are opposed to Bashar al-Assad. Sometimes they are hitting those ISIL positions, but most of their attacks are on non-ISIL forces which are supported by the United States. So there is a fear that probably Iranians will get the upper hand in Syria, and it is going to probably create some problems for Israel, because Israel does not want Iranians to become influential in Syria. And also, Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and Qatar and Kuwait do not want Hezbollah or the Iranian-supported militia to get influence in Syria.
What will Syria look like if the government forces prevail? Will there be a greater Russian and Iranian influence in Syria?
Syria is the only country where Russia has a naval base. And also they are using the Syrian airports. In Latakia, for example, most of the Russian planes are flying from inside Syria, refueling there. That there will be a tremendous Russian influence. And also if Bashar al-Assad wins and remains in power, so there is this fear that Iran will be very influential and so will be Russia. And that's going to disturb the equilibrium.
What impact will these government victories have on the peace process supposedly going underway in Geneva?
Probably they're positioning themselves ahead of the United Nations-sponsored conference to take as much territory under the control as possible and also inflict casualties on the ISIL forces. Some estimates are saying that probably 150 to 200 ISIL fighters have been killed. The success was achieved by heavy Russian bombardment of the ISIL positions.
A senior member of President Assad's ruling Ba'ath Party said in remarks published Sunday the government will not make any new concessions in future peace talks. Does that put the peace process in doubt?
Yeah. There is a danger now. So as long as the Syrian forces are advancing with the help of the air power of the Russians and Iranians, Bashar al-Assad is not going to give up his power or not compromise with the opposition in Syria. So his position will be stiffer in the future and stronger.
Speaking Monday during a visit to Laos, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry dismissed the refusal of concessions by Damascus as posturing and said that he hopes to have clarity on the Geneva talks shortly. A Pakistani university that was attacked last week by militants opened its doors again, at least temporarily. At least 21 people, including 18 students, were killed in the attack. VOA's Aisha Tanzim was there as it reopened and files this report.
Students returned to Bachahan University briefly for a prayer service to remember their fallen friends.
We're here to avenge our blood. How long will Pashtun kids continue to die?
Pashtuns have always been labeled terrorists. but we want to show that we are not terrorists. We are victims of terrorism.
The university is only open to the faculty and staff for now amid tight security. There'll be no classes until further notice. The administration said it is considering several factors, including a forecast for dense fog for several days. The attackers last week used fog as cover as they stormed the campus. Parents of some of the victims also attended the prayer service. One father demanded an independent inquiry.
There should be a judicial inquiry so that we can find out who is negligent in their responsibilities, and they should be duly punished. Once you have one judicial inquiry and responsible parties punished, such incidents will
stop.
Later, outside the gates, students held up banners, some demanding revenge, others seeking peace. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Charsadda.
It's time for a look at social media. And Michael Lippin is here to tell us about reaction to a surprise development in a U.S. legal case that involves a pro-abortion rights group called Planned Parenthood. Michael?
That's right, Jim. Yes, Planned Parenthood is a nonprofit organization providing reproductive health services to Americans, services that include birth control and abortion. That surprise development happened on Monday in Texas, where a grand jury has been investigating a video produced by two anti-abortion activists. One of them pretended to be a biotech worker as he secretly filmed himself engaging in an apparent negotiation with Planned Parenthood staff to buy aborted fetuses. Now, profiting from the sale of such fetuses is illegal in the U.S. Planned Parenthood denied the accusation, and now on Monday, the jury not only cleared the organization of any wrongdoing, but it instead indicted the two activists who made the video. They were charged with tampering with a governmental record, and one of them also was charged with a misdemeanor related to purchasing human organs. Now, the social media reaction has been pretty swift. The words Planned Parenthood became a trending topic on Twitter in the U.S. and worldwide. Pro-abortion Twitter users were very pleased by the news. One American, Crystal Ward, tweeted this: "Excuse me while I do a dance of joy over the idiots who made the anti-Planned Parenthood videos being indicted for felony."
Did the main anti-abortion activist have anything to say on Twitter?
Well, his name is David DeLaden, and his handle is @DavidDeLaden. He did tweet a few hours ago a link to an opinion piece of his published on Monday by the USA Today newspaper, in which he again criticizes Planned Parenthood and accuses it of brutality toward fetuses. He didn't immediately tweet anything about the new indictment against him, but his critics responded to his USA Today post with taunts like, "Enjoy going to prison," and things like that. On the other side, Republican presidential contender Mike Huckabee, who's a prominent abortion critic, tweeted this: "It's a sick day in America when our government punishes those who expose evil with a cell phone, yet accommodates those who perform it with a scalpel." Jim?
Strong opinions on both sides of this issue, and we'll certainly hear a lot more about this. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Michael Lippin can be followed on Twitter @Michael_Lippin. You can also follow all of us at our program page for International Edition. That's @VOA_IE. I'm out there as well, @VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. Recent turmoil in Chinese financial markets have investors again looking at how China's economy is evolving and measures Beijing is taking to keep its currency stable. Senior international economics correspondent Carter Doherty with International Business Times joins us to discuss what is happening with the renminbi.
The challenge for the Chinese has been to manage the downward slide of their currency in a way that doesn't upset the rest of the world or encourage additional flight of money out of China. That's proven to be a real challenge because the Chinese don't have a long history of communicating well with financial markets or communicating at all for that matter. And also, frankly, because there's a lot of Chinese that would like to get some money out of their own markets. So they're to some extent up against the pressure of their own people.
In the United States, we're very familiar with Chinese investors in real estate because they feel that is a good place to put their money. How much money is flowing out of China, and what is Beijing trying to do to stop it?
We don't know 100% exactly how much money flows out and when. We can take a look at the foreign exchange reserves of the central bank and guess at some of the outflows. And those reserves were down by about $100 billion in the month of December, which tells us there was flight of money out at a pretty good clip. The challenge of the Chinese these days is to take their financial markets to the next level and convince what you might call patient long-term investors. These are insurance companies, pension funds, and other central banks, that China is a good place to put your money and that you can leave it there despite periods of occasional volatility. But that in turn involves things like opening the Chinese bond market more to foreign investors and transparent, clear regulatory regime. And the challenge in all this is fundamentally that those involve giving up a measure of control, and that's something the regime in Beijing is not terribly comfortable with.
Beijing has tried to set up special economic zones, one most recently in Shanghai. Is that having an effect?
Those are more experimental places where the Chinese sort of fiddle around with what might be possible on a broader scale. So far, I haven't seen a lot of evidence to suggest that those are runaway successes in one direction or the other. But again, if you find to have a successful experiment in Shanghai or elsewhere, whether you want to propagate that, you know, through the entire country and relinquish a measure of control, that's another matter. It's a political decision, and nobody really knows exactly what the President Xi Jinping has in mind.
What are some of the areas where money is actually flowing into China besides trade?
Well, the challenge of the Chinese these days is to convert from an export-driven manufacturing economy to one that is based more on services. And that's certainly not impossible, but the challenge will be moving that along quickly enough to accommodate a kind of new normal in which China maybe exports less, but Chinese consumers use more domestic services. And that can be all sorts of things, you know, whether it's retailing services or medical services, you name it. And there is a good chance that the Chinese will pull this off. It probably means the end of the sort of meteoric growth rates of 10% per year, but that was bound to come down at some point.
Carter Doherty is a senior international economics reporter for International Business Times. Carter, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure.
In many ways, the health and diets of Americans has been deteriorating for decades. The causes and effects of one particular and apparently pervasive problem, silent acid reflux, seems to be rarely noticed by many people who have it. Silent acid reflux is also becoming a large American export around the world. Dr. Jamie Kaufman has been studying the effects of silent acid reflux for years and has just published a new book to help people combat it by eating better. She joins us to explain more.
The word reflux is derived from re, meaning back, and fluere. It's Latin to flow. So it literally means backflow, and it's the backflow of the stomach contents including acid and digestive enzymes, into the esophagus and even into the respiratory tract.
What are some of the issues that people would have as a result of reflux?
Most people think of reflux only as being heartburn, which is chest pain, usually after a big, heavy meal, and indigestion. But our work has shown is that reflux has many forms, and believe it or not, fewer than half of people have heartburn or indigestion. We call it silent because people can have bad, even potentially life-threatening reflux without having any heartburn or indigestion. They wake up and they've got breathing problems, sinus problems, voice problems, cough, and all these other symptoms.
How many people are we talking about in the United States who are likely to be suffering with some form of this?
Well, we did a study called the Times Square Study. We interviewed 1,000 people in great detail. We actually spent 6 months doing the study, and we found that about 20% of the population had typical reflux symptoms, meaning heartburn and indigestion, and another 20% had respiratory reflux or silent reflux. We were seeing reflux across all age groups. That was a huge surprise.
You've been studying this for a long time, and you've come up with a very interesting book, The Acid Reflux Diet. Tell us a little bit about the kinds of things that people should be considering in their diet, changes they should be making, and how they should be eating.
I used to put everybody on all these pills, and what happened was I started seeing the worst of the worst patients. And so everyone came to me already on those medications, and they were doing poorly, particularly those who had breathing problems. And so we began to look at some of the issues: obesity, diabetes, acid reflux, sleep apnea, and asthma all have skyrocketed in the last 40 years, and they all follow changes in our diets. When I first see somebody, I put them on a detox diet, which is extremely tight. Nothing acidic in the diet, nothing out of a bottle or a can except water, no alcohol, one cup of coffee in the morning, only fruit you can have is melons and bananas, and then all the clean food, nothing fried, and so on for the first 2 weeks. What we found is that the problem of soda pop and soft drinks in general was a huge trigger for reflux. So number one on my hit parade for things you ought to do is get rid of soft drinks. Second thing is close the kitchen at 8. The later you eat, the more likely you are to have reflux. Number three, never fall asleep drunk. If you're going to sleep with a buzz and a bunch of alcohol in your system, you're refluxing all night. And finally, eat lean, clean, green, and alkaline. The whole idea is to try to get good calories in all throughout the day so you don't have one big, huge refueling after you get home from work in the evening. Those are the basics.
Many of our listeners reside in countries where they've had a long history of very good diets, and we've seen in recent times the Americanization of food around the world, and some of these problems are starting to crop up elsewhere, especially in China.
There's no question about it. Basically, where the American diet goes, reflux follows. In China now, the diet's changed. People have become more and more urban, and they eat later. They eat less healthy.
Your book is titled Acid Reflux Diet, with 111 all-new recipes, including vegan and gluten-free, which I'm sure will make a lot of people very happy.
I would say that I have two books on reflux. One is called Dropping Acid, The Reflux Diet Cookbook and Cure. And the Dropping Acid book is really the starter book. It's the one to really understand reflux, particularly silent reflux. It's the most basic book. And the new book, Dr. Kaufman's Acid Reflux Diet, has been designed as the advanced course in the longevity diet.
Check out both of those books. Dr. Kaufman, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Cleanup efforts are well underway after a massive winter storm Friday and Saturday that crippled parts of the U.S. East Coast with a record-shattering snowfall and coastal floods. Millions of people have been affected by this storm, and VOA's Chris Simpkins has more on the story.
Millions of people are digging out and cleaning up after record snowfall blanketed communities in the Northeast, including Washington, D.C. and New York City. The blizzard of 2016 also brought flooding along coastal communities from Maryland to New York.
A lot of cleanup to do, and it's still not going to be entirely safe.
The massive storm dumped 76 centimeters of snow in some places, causing dozens of deaths, most caused by heart attacks. Many people are overwhelmed with the amount of snow they have to remove.
It's nature, but I wish it didn't come. It's a lot. I had two cars to dig out, so it's a lot.
In and around Washington, D.C., many neighborhood streets remain impassable, forcing the federal government, schools, and many businesses to close.
But we have some challenges ahead of us. We'll continue to plow our streets and pick up the snow so that we can move on and get a clean city. And we're going to strive for that every day until we're there.
At the airports, crews were busy clearing runways as some airlines resumed operations after more than 14,000 flights were canceled during 2 days. Travelers are frustrated.
Got stuck here last night, slept in a hotel, came today, and my flight is canceled again. So trying to make my way back to Raleigh, North Carolina.
Limited commuter rail service got going again. But officials say it will take days before things return to normal and most businesses open. Officials say in addition to hurting local economies, the storm cleanup and property damage costs have already topped tens of millions of dollars. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
American singer, actress, author, businesswoman, and humanitarian Dolly Parton has turned 70 years old. She celebrated on January 19th. Across all media platforms, many in country music and beyond celebrated. International Edition's Sarah Williams talks with VOA Music's Nikki Strong about why Dolly is so beloved.
Nikki, give us a quick overview of Dolly's accomplishments.
Okay, well, Dolly's an incredible personality overall. Musically, she's prolific. Islands in the Stream, 9 to 5, Jolene, the list goes on. She is the most honored female country performer of all time. She's been in the business for over 50 years. She started as a child. She's had 25 number one songs on the Billboard Country Charts, a record for a female artist. She has 41 top 10 country albums, which is a record for any artist. And even though she has garnered 8 Grammy Awards, she has received 46 Grammy nominations, tying her with Bruce Springsteen for the most Grammy nominations and placing her in 10th place overall. And she's in the Country Music Hall of Fame. There's so many awards, too many to mention. I will say this. She is also one of the very few artists who have received at least one nomination for an Oscar, a Grammy, a Tony, and an Emmy.
Very impressive.
Yes.
Well, Dolly's a great storyteller, and she's got a distinctive look.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Dolly is just an experience. And not just in the lyrics of her music, but how she would share stories about her life. And even in her look, she said that she modeled herself after the town tramp with big blonde hair and high heels and red fingernails and lips. She said to her, you know, the town tramp was like a movie star for her and the kids. And her mother would say, oh, she ain't nothing but trash, nothing but trash. And Dolly said, ooh, that's what I'm going to be when I grow up. Trash. But you know, for her to even see the value of what others deem trash and embrace it and affirm it is a part of her charm and why people really love her. She also told stories about what it was like growing up poor. And in one of them, she says, the kids peed on me every night. And this is a quote. She said, there were so many of us. So we slept three or four in the bed. I would wash every night. And as soon as I go to bed, the kids would wet on me. And I'd have to get up in the morning and do the same thing. But that was the only warm thing we knew in the wintertime. That was almost a pleasure to get peed on because it was so cold. Lord, it was as cold in the room as it was outside.
Wow, yeah. And it should be noted, she's one of 12 kids.
One of 12 kids with an incredible rags to riches story. And she's always been grounded and transparent and proud of her roots and her faith-filled roots, too, and how her upbringing has made her who she is.
Well, she's done a lot of philanthropy.
She has. She has the Dollywood Foundation, which a lot of people know, and it's widely known for her literacy program, Imagination Library, in which she distributes more than 10 million free books a year to children annually. She's raised money for the Red Cross and HIV/AIDS-related causes, to name a few as well.
Well, her movies captured her charisma as well.
Oh, yeah. She's great. From Steel Magnolias, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, 9 to 5. You know Dolly as a force to be reckoned with, and you loved it. So it's the kind of force that I think makes the world a better place. And as you know, she recently produced the movie Code of Colors, based on her life, and she is working on the film Jolene, which is based on her hit song, which, of course, is about a woman who knows her power to make men cheat. So I'm looking forward to that story. Dolly Parton is one of a kind, and so we couldn't help but celebrate her all throughout social media and beyond.
All right, well, there's much to celebrate. Happy birthday, Dolly Parton. You can hear more of Dolly's music on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook at VOA Music or on Twitter at VOA_music. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Sarah.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter. Our engineer is Daryl Smith, at least for the last half hour, maybe a little longer. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're here in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us and invite you to come back and visit again. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On a recent trip to Burma, Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken congratulated the Burmese for their recent nationwide parliamentary elections. For the first time since 1990, he said, the voices of citizens were heard, and this time they are being respected. The elections were a significant step forward in the journey to democracy in Burma that respects the rights of all. Burma's main opposition party, the National League for Democracy, or NLD, won. The results, said Deputy Secretary Blinken, validate the sacrifices made by many brave Burmese in the years when even dreaming of this day was dangerous. This is particularly true of the NLD's longtime leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, who spent many years under house arrest. But this is only the beginning. As Deputy Secretary Blinken noted, the coming transition is but one milestone on the road to full democracy. We know there are still many challenges ahead. These challenges include encouraging broad-based economic growth, continuing the national reconciliation process, releasing all remaining political prisoners, and protecting human rights. The U.S. also encourages continued national reconciliation efforts and urges an end to offensive military operations. The U.S. calls for unrestricted humanitarian access to civilians in need. The U.S. remains concerned about discrimination and violence against ethnic and religious minorities, including the Rohingya population in Rakhine State. The solution is the rule of law, applied equally to all, ensuring protection from violence, freedom of movement, access to livelihoods, education and health, and an equal chance for everyone to participate in the democratic life of their country. The United States is committed to standing with the people of Burma in their pursuit of democracy, development, human rights, and national reconciliation. The U.S. is actively looking to support the new government as political transition continues. Since 2012, the U.S. has provided more than $500 million in support of Burma's reform process. The U.S. will continue to be a steadfast partner to Burma in its efforts to build a more democratic and peaceful future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's for...